Hello, I'm David Feinstein, and I'm very pleased to welcome you to this program, When Unresolved Trauma Intrudes into Your Tapping Session, where I will be interviewing Dr. Craig Weiner. Craig has been practicing in the healing arts for 30 years as a chiropractor, somatic body worker, EFT practitioner, and matrix re-imprinting trainer in conjunction with his wife, Alina Frank. And I find Craig to be just one of the real bright lights in this field in terms of the services he provides, in terms of the training he provides, and in terms of the quick wit of his mind. And so, and he laughs at my anyway, you hear him laughing back there. So welcome, Craig. I'm really glad to be exploring this topic with you.
Oh, David, it's not only my pleasure, but my honor. So I couldn't think of a better way to spend the next hour or whatever time we spend together talking about this. So thank you.
Great. So to get right into it, you know, we're really looking at the ways that EFT practitioners, some of them are fully trained mental health professionals, some of them are coaches who really have very little training outside of their EFT training in terms of the nature of psychopathology and the theories of counseling and all of that. And so our audience really spans that range. And but even the trained mental health professionals have not necessarily delved into the topic of trauma in their, in at least in their graduate programs, in the way that it's coming to be understood just in the last few years. And so I'm wondering, what, for thinking of a tapping practitioner, what are some of the most important elements that they need to consider when they are working with clients who either are presenting with issues that involve trauma, or probably more commonly where that's not what the person is presenting, but traumatic memories and experiences come up in a powerful way. What are the elements that people need to consider?
Well, I think that's a great question, and you framed it very well, because again, we're making the distinction that there are some people that are using tapping and EFT and other tapping modalities that have not had the depth of training that social workers, marriage and family therapists, psychologists have had. And while I'm certainly not saying that you have to have that to be a tapping practitioner, it does speak to not having the kind of rigorous training in working with people with trauma. And so we really have to be cognizant of this issue, don't we? Because trauma is a whole nother bailiwick. It's a whole nother level of understanding and neurophysiological changes and understanding of memory. There's so many different aspects. We'll talk about some of them.
Yeah, let's try to go into that.
We will get there. But I guess what I just actually want to say with first is that when we start, when any practitioner starts working with a client that has had trauma, in which it's coming in the periphery, in which it comes up, the first and foremost element that we need to be able to do is teach the client about what's called neuroregulation, right, which really is the ability in a simple way to help that person return their nervous system back to a calm state in which they can optimally learn and be creative and be able to think clearly. So tapping, of course, is, this is what's wonderful, a type of neuroregulation that they can use to self-regulate, and we have to teach them how to tap, which, of course, every practitioner does. And we also have to teach them about resourcing. And I just want to say that. So when we teach them about resourcing, you know, resourcing, depending on how you defined it, is, you know, finding the activities, the people, the places, et cetera, whatever the situations are, that when we think about them and we imagine them and we recall them, that they help to identify a positive felt sense, a positive feeling, which helps them to regulate themselves. So I would just say, when, you know, three, four things just keep coming to mind. One is, we have to teach them, all the practitioners have to know and understand and be able to explain to their clients how to regulate themselves. We have to be able to teach and help them, assist them in being able to find resources so that in the session or outside of the session, they know those ahead of time. We have to, as a practitioner, be able to create a sense of safety, right? Because that's absolutely essential. And we have to employ, as we all hopefully do in a session, is a sense of connection with another person, because that also enables them to self-regulate themselves. So, you know, these are just very preliminary but foundational concepts that I think need to be conscious and aware for every practitioner that's working with people doing tapping, that they understand those basics.
Yes. I think that the I think that it's critical for the, particularly a new practitioner, to be prepared, because I think one of the fears is people will lose it, or people mm-hmm. will, in, you know, the terminology of psychotherapy, people will have an abreaction and perhaps a dissociative experience where they don't know where they are, who they are, and you're speaking of four foundational tools and concepts for the practitioner to start with, in anticipation that this may happen.
Yeah, so it's always preventative so that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. But things do happen in the session that we don't always expect, right?
Right. So we're talking about trauma. What do we mean by trauma?
That should be an easy question, shouldn't it? Right?
One would think.
One would think it would be. But it's, I even just saw a recent, I forget what it was, but there was a great discussion on what do we mean by trauma, as it's starting to become a word that's in the general public's listening on a different level right now, because for the longest time, trauma, traumatic medicine, et cetera, was mostly physical trauma, primarily thought of that way, physical injury, a car accident, really injury on a physical level was primarily thought of as trauma, and certainly over the decades and through the DSM and lots of other ways, trauma has been expanded to be able to include, of course, the emotional aspect of trauma, right, which can obviously go hand in hand with physical trauma.
Right.
And terms that are commonly used that are need to be in place for something to be referred to as an emotional trauma are perception of danger, a sense of overwhelm, of helplessness, a sense of fear or threat or harm to oneself. So all of those elements and more start to bring about and categorize somebody as having had a traumatic experience. And of course, that's all based on perception, and we can have a long discussion about that, but if the person perceives it that way, then it's so for them, even if it doesn't
right.
seem that way for somebody else. And perception of trauma, of course, varies from one's resources, one's age, one's past history, and so many other things. But often trauma is also divided depending on where the conversation's having on little t traumas or big T traumas, and, you know, big T traumas can be obviously physical and sexual abuse, rape, and real physical harm. So all of those are typically thought of as big T traumas. Little T traumas still carry the essence of helplessness, fear of harm, and all of those things, but it could be a small child being left in a room alone for an hour, that to that child, even though they weren't truly in danger, for example, for that period of time, it felt as if their life was threatened. So there's not always a really clear separation between little T and big T traumas, but it does say that, you know, as we refer to it, there's a trauma spectrum from a very minimal side, from a smaller side to a very, very large aspect.
And what you're saying is that the perception of danger is what matters, not the actual physical reality, but the perception can be traumatizing.
Sure. And, you know, it's not necessarily rational, right, in the way we would think of that. If if we had a traumatic childhood where we were harmed by a caregiver, and suddenly as an adult somebody starts raising their voice in the same way that that caregiver did, there's our bodies and our sense and our perception of the experience is literally like, oh my God, I'm not only in trouble, I'm going to get harmed here, I got to get out. And they're responding and reacting as if really their life might be in danger, even though in that moment they truly weren't. But the perception is everything.
Right. And that experience can carry over into the future.
Absolutely, and does all the time. And we see that in our tapping clients. All the time.
Yeah. Well, let's go into that, because a lot of tapping practitioners are working more with, quote, healthy people, with performers or athletes or successful business people who maybe have a public speaking fear or a physical pain or are working with weight loss, that kind of thing. Why would practitioners who have that kind of orientation really need training for working with trauma? Is it really necessary, or is that kind of just sort of opening the envelope too wide?
You know, that's maybe the most important question that we can address here. I mean, they all are, but that's critically important, because I think that there are many practitioners with a niche or a focus of practice. Ones clearly that are not trying to specifically have people work with trauma because they know that they're not licensed, et cetera, or they don't have sufficient training or experience yet. But you know what? It happens. It just happens when we least expect it. When my wife, Alina, Frank tells a story about earlier in her practicing career when she was, I think it was a senior center, and she was giving a demonstration and a talk on EFT, and she wanted very carefully to not address the big issue. So somebody had a bit of a shoulder pain, right? And so they started tapping on the shoulder pain, and within 3 minutes, the shoulder pain had led back to a very severe traumatic event that had happened earlier in her life, and all of a sudden in the group, the person was crying, and it got very emotional. And here, you know, 2 minutes before, it was about old pain in her shoulder. So when we work
with
tapping...
That's a very vivid example. It's a very vivid
it
example.
It is. It's certainly not always like that, but I don't think that there's a tapping practitioner that's, you know, been actively seeing clients in which they haven't seen that happen in some way, where all of a sudden somebody's talking about something that, a scene that happened this last week, something at work, something in their relationship, public speaking, and all of a sudden, a memory comes flooding back, perhaps an implicit memory, through their body, and all of a sudden, they're shaking, tears are welling up. They didn't plan on going there. They didn't even remember the event consciously until all of a sudden they started flooding. So the reason why every practitioner that's doing tapping needs to have a deeper understanding of trauma is that tapping is so effective, I believe, in literally tapping into deeply held learnings from our past. We've all had our share of a variety of traumas on that trauma scale, and they can come up at any time. So as practitioners, we need to know what are the ones we can handle, what are the ones that once they come up and somebody starts getting highly aroused, that we can be able to bring them back into a balanced, regulated state, and then have a plan of, do we continue working with them? Do we refer out? All of those questions need to be handled appropriately.
Right.
But I don't think that you can be a tapping practitioner and think that it's not going to happen.
Now, you've looked at a lot of different training programs for EFT and other energy psychology approaches. In your opinion, do you think that tapping practitioners are getting sufficient training in working with trauma, given what you're talking about right now and the possibilities of the strong responses or reactions happening in a session? Are practitioners being prepared adequately?
That's a good question, and
it gives you a chance to
one.
put down your colleagues.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to. But I'm going to be authentic and honest about it. So, Ali and I've trained for EFT Universe, for AHP, for Matrix Reimprinting. There's certainly wonderful training certifying organizations through AMED and through ASAP. And so of these types of programs that I know includes mentoring and, you know, a depth of learning, that's wonderful. But even in the trainings that we teach, we offer gentle techniques. We teach about trauma and trauma capsules. But you know what? A few weekends, really, and with having to learn all the techniques and so many different things, there's not nearly the room and the time to go into the depth of trauma training that needs to be. And It certainly doesn't have the opportunity, because it's certainly just limited by the amount of time and training time that's available, to bring in the wealth and depth of learning that's coming from the trauma field work. People like Bessel van der Kolk and people like Stephen Porges, and so much of that work that's in the trauma world that we can utilize and learn from and gain access to that'll help us be better practitioners, the answer is no. I don't believe that just a basic level of certification in any of the organizations really sufficiently trains anybody in trauma. Offers a good beginning, but our education needs to continue.
I think that's a nice balanced answer. I think it's a nice balanced answer that you're giving. Because it's a real dilemma for training programs that want to be efficient and get people trained as rapidly as possible. But often when there's an issue that is a difficult one, such as dealing with trauma, there's a lot of lip service and concern and yes, let's deal with this, but then the tools that are available are somewhat anemic compared to the kinds of problems that are being addressed. Do you think, you know, there's a lot of research and increasing understanding emerging, particularly from the neuroscience of trauma. Is it at a level that this information can really empower a practitioner to be more effective?
Absolutely. I think that depending on the level of education a practitioner has, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I kind of jumped on you there. But I really think that, yes, some of it may be written at a level beyond the practitioner, and certainly not all of it. You know, for example, the beautiful re-release of The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk, I think that most practitioners can absolutely integrate and take that in. Bruce Ecker's work on unlocking the emotional brain and memory reconsolidation, some of this stuff is a stretch. So, you know, when I teach about it, I think it's one of the gifts I bring, to be really honest, is to be able to take more challenging concepts than the way it's written in the research, and to be able to make it very simple to understand. It's also something you do very well, David, in your writing. You really bring complex subjects and neuroscience and neuroanatomy and bring it into a way that really I think almost every practitioner can start to integrate. And when we learn about, for example, when I teach about my partner Suzanne, we teach about the polyvagal theory. Now, I remember when I first hit like polyvagal theory and my brain hurt for a little while. And the second time it hurt a little bit less. And the third time I started to have these ahas and then light bulbs. And then all of a sudden, as I started to hit it on a different level, all of a sudden experiences from my past started coming up that started really making sense to me. When he speaks about, you know, the neuroception and how our bodies know whether a situation or senses whether a situation is safe or not, and how we learn that based on another person's, the way their eyes look, the way their face looks, the way their voice sounds. We all intuitively know these things, but bringing them into awareness and helping a client understand there's a reason why you react that way in that situation. It's your brain. It's not you, per se. Like there's something wrong with you. That's the way you're wired. And you're wired because of the things from your past. So if you can start to understand that, and you don't have to necessarily teach a client and call it polyvagal theory and neuroception and all of that, but if you can explain the concepts, then that's just so empowering. When Dan Siegel uses his hand model and he talks about and he shows with his hand what the brain looks like, and he stretches his finger and he describes to a patient, for example, what it looks like and what happens to our brain when we, quote, flip our lid. and we become hyper-aroused. All of these things are accessible. Sometimes they just need a teacher, a mentor, or some way to help to understand that, and it becomes accessible to us. And then it absolutely changes the way we practice. I don't think it cannot. And I think it helps us also introspectively understand things on a deeper level for our past. I had my own challenges when I was young. And for me, I always knew that a sense of safety was critically important for me to feel whole, for example, and healthy and able to communicate freely in a relationship, etc. And the more that I've understood the neuroscience work of trauma, the more it's helped me to understand and see all the elements of work striving for safety, where the need for safety, even though I felt like, God, why do you have to need it to be so safe? You're just a wuss, right, with kind of the self-talk that I had. And now, on a neuroscientific level, I understand that nothing really happens, no healing happens without safety and creating that container. We're doing that for our clients all the time, but understanding some of the neuroscience and underlying mechanisms, I think, just empowers us as practitioners and also makes us feel incredibly proud to be tapping practitioners, whatever way we're doing that.
Yeah, that's really, really well put. To take that further, the understanding of how the nervous system creates trauma and helps to release the effects of trauma, both of those are, like you mentioned, Bessel van der Kolk's new book, The Body Keeps the Score, which is a beautiful book. It's just incredible, account of his decades of discovering how to treat people with PTSD. Can you give some examples of how this understanding of the way the brain creates trauma and the way the brain releases trauma can really help one of our listeners who is a practitioner who might encounter encounter a traumatic memory that was not processed and that comes up very raw? How does this more intellectual understanding help that practitioner?
Sure. I think how I'd like to respond first is Bessel, if I remember exactly how he says it, but basically the purpose of being human in a sense, or the human imperative, I think is what he says, is to be connected to each other, that as human beings, our connection to each other is what sustains us, it's what enables us to survive, and as he'll elucidate further, we're wired for this kind of social engagement, for this connection with other beings and other humans. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that social engagement exists within, neurologically, a social engagement system. Okay? Mm-hmm. When we understand that, trauma comes from some breach or harm in our social engagement systems with others, most typically. It can certainly happen as well from, let's just say, a natural disaster, but most commonly from breaches in our social engagement with others. For example, as infants, we learn to trust the world. We learn how to engage with people through interacting with our primary caregiver, whoever that is, mother, et cetera. And if that person's able to be there for us, when we learn to trust and we learn to develop as healthy human beings, which is hopefully what all of us aspire to do for ourselves, for our children. But if we get continually met with social disengagement, disconnection, whether we were ignored or there was abuse, that leads us to being less trusting and more withdrawn from connection and intimacy and human interaction. So just by understanding that, for those especially tapping practitioners that haven't had much education in attachment, for example, on attachment theory, which discusses that a lot, if we just understand that, that can help us understand that in order to repair trauma, a client needs to be able to engage in a trusting and warm and empathetic relationship with a practitioner, for example. and we use all of, for example, Stephen Porges' ventral vagal aspects, part of the polyvagal theory, which basically is we're using gentle eye contact, we're not forcing eye contact, we're using a nurturing voice, we're using compassionate facial expressions that we're blessed to have hardwired into our system. And so when we provide these tools and we understand what they are, they can help provide a container and a safe space so that the client, when they're starting to move out of a regulated state, in a sense can use us, can use another human being again and learn how to neuroregulate themselves through their interaction with another safe, appropriate human being in a safe space and time. And their ability to start to see, experience that and learn that and then be able to, and if they need to, for example, do attachment work, they need to find a practitioner that can really work with that over time. It's something that doesn't happen overnight. But all of these things, as we start to understand how to provide those cues more consciously as a practitioner, can more efficiently and effectively empower our clients to be able to move along in their healing journey faster and more thoroughly.
So the way that the brain is constructed to connect with people, an understanding that that is a basic dynamic in the room, guides the practitioner in knowing what to look for and how to respond to what is found.
Sure, and just like you said, the observation, right? So the learning the cues as in sensing, right? My partner, Suzanne Fagel, is just a master in sensing, sensing energetically, mm-hmm. sensing visually, sensing auditorially, and being able to really have your finger on the pulse of, without ever assuming, but observing deeply where somebody is, tracking them enables you to more skillfully know where to go next in a session. And that's a critical piece.
Yes.
Because things show up in their body often before they do in their voice. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That happens very commonly.
Mm-hmm. So observing the body gives a lot of direction for the practitioner to really be able to see and to interpret what they're seeing, or at least explore what they're seeing.
It is, because trauma comes in through the body, and so we need effectively to be able to work through the body, really, to release that intense emotionality around some past event or person. And, you know, in the various fields of somatic trauma release work, of which tapping is certainly one of them, somatic experiencing, Hakomi, other ones, in working through the body, we found it to be an incredibly effective way to release long-held traumatic memories.
Mm-hmm. Talk more about that. How do you work with the body to release the effects of traumatic memories?
Yeah, well, there are different ways. If we look at just, you know, classic tapping, you know, what are the elements of the body or the somatic elements? Well, one is we're tapping on the body, which is, I'm not going to say better or worse or anything. I'm not going to compare it. But, for example, in many traditional talk therapies, CBT and others, there's not much of a somatic component. So the body's really almost kind of being left aside. More trauma-directed interventions, of which there are many, incorporate the somatic aspect, which in EFT is tapping on our body. So that's certainly one component. Another one is whenever we do a round, what are we doing? We're asking them, really, as Eugene Shenlin put it, for a felt sense. What emotion are you feeling? Do you feel it anywhere in your body? What does that feel like? So we're having them tune in to their body. So we're starting to really have a deepening of a mind-body connection. And because, especially with trauma, you know, I'm not going to get into a deep discussion on memory here, but there's pieces of explicit memory. In other words, they're going to remember some of the details of when something happened or how old they were. But many of the details of what happens around trauma are implicit ones. They're, in a sense, held in the body. They're like body memories that may or may not have the words to describe them, and they come up through the body. So often a person might start flushing or sweating or starting to shift and have body reactions before they've even kind of landed on the details of something. And so the beauty about tapping is that it's a somato-emotional, it's using the emotions, the psyche, the body, in a really integrated, holistic way, and in working with trauma, that really seems to be really necessary. And I love the way, again, Bessel van der Kolk is talking about that in his book, the body keeps the score. brain, mind, and body in the healing of trauma. He's not just talking about talking your way out of trauma, because talking about trauma can often re-traumatize and rewire and continue the same wiring that's been there before without releasing it. So the body is really important.
Well, you just said so much, Craig. That was a compliment. Because you're describing a kind of mindfulness, bringing a kind of mindfulness into the session, so that the person is in being aware of their bodily reactions, that they are really, really engaging themselves at a different level than when, you know, very, very often in anxiety conditions, the person is running from those feelings, running from the body reactions. And so to engage them and then have tools to, as you said in the beginning, regulate those reactions, gives the body-oriented therapies, and particularly, I find tapping, a whole set of skills that are not not that readily available to talk therapists. And it raises an issue that's been discussed somewhat, is do you want to tap away the client's uncomfortable feelings, or mm-hmm. is it better to have the person experience them and engage them and learn how to tolerate them? Is that something that you cover in your training?
No, that's a great question. My first thought in response to that is, do we want to, so to rephrase it, is do we want to tap away the negative feelings?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do we want to tap away? And I guess I would reframe that. I would say, and I would also make the distinction, for example, if I'm in the moment right now feeling irritated because I'm running behind, because something in my computer is not working, mm-hmm. because my laptop mm-hmm. Isn't working right, I would say that's one level of working with a negative feeling. And certainly tapping focuses on that, because it's what's there. It's what's mm-hmm. present. And I have to make the distinction that that's very different than how we work with trauma, or how trauma is worked with, basically, because they're two very different entities. And there are times if a trauma is being worked with and a freeze response is engaged that, for example, you do not want to have them necessarily go right into their body. It can be overwhelming. It's not safe there. So there's caveats. And there's no clear lines. You always want them to tap away the negative. You don't want them to focus on the negative. So it depends, and it's unique, and I think a good practitioner starts to develop the skills to know when or when not to. I want to say that as a practitioner, we always have to be careful of knowing what's best or knowing what's needed for each person, too. And if we bring too many assumptions for what is best for them or the direction that we're taking them, unless you're a mental health care practitioner and you're a coach, there needs to be a collaboration. You're not leading and directing them in the same way. So there are a lot of elements that come into answering that question, and I don't know that there's a singular answer to it.
So part of your answer is that yes, this is an issue, whether to tap away the negativity, that depends very much on the situation, the client, what is going on in that moment, and that one of the ways of working with that wide range of individual differences is to be in working in collaboration with the client, so that you're not imposing a model onto what should happen next, but really getting your cues from what's going on with the person.
No, I couldn't say it any better. So, yes.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah. Okay. So, is it an issue for tapping practitioners? You mentioned the word re-traumatize. Is that something that I think tapping has the reputation of not re-traumatizing people. But what does the practitioner need to understand about the risks
mm-hmm.
of re-traumatizing
someone? Yeah, really important. And to be honest, I think it's the shadow discussion that's not spoken of enough. You know, if we can help somebody, we can harm somebody. If can somebody be re-traumatized? The answer is absolutely yes. And, you know, as a mentor, teacher, et cetera, it's in those private discussions that we hear about, you know, a practitioner that went to another practitioner and, you know, and maybe they were a new practitioner and things that happened in that session that really re-traumatized them. So the answer is yes, we really need to be open that that's a possibility, not like isn't fearful, but to use it to empower us to know where not to go, to know absolutely when to refer. For example, that, you know, Suzanne and I teach, we make sure that people all practitioners have the skill to be able to re-regulate a client, but then what to do from there. You know, we certainly know that if you're not a mental health care provider, you shouldn't be treating somebody or working with somebody with schizophrenia or bipolar or certainly somebody that's suicidal or treating them for any DSM-5 condition or diagnosis. Those you just shouldn't be doing. That doesn't mean, however, that you can't work in collaboration with licensed providers, that they know what you're doing and they're monitoring this and they're perhaps monitoring a medication and you're working in collaboration with them. That's actually ideal. That's wonderful. And why it's so important to create referral networks in which you can do that. You know, I know you won't say it, so I'm going to say, David, your ethics handbook for energy healing practitioners is a great resource, one we use in two of the organizations we teach for.
Thank you.
For giving examples of scenarios and how to handle them when they come up. What if somebody didn't write down in their intake form that they had a diagnosis of schizophrenia and it comes out in the session? How do you handle that? How do you gently handle a referral mm-hmm. out so that the client doesn't feel betrayed? These are all really, really important and sensitive issues that are critical when mm-hmm. we're working with tapping, because trauma, diagnoses, things come up in ways that we don't often have planned or expect.
Right. And there are answers to those questions that come up, and they really boil down to treating your client with a lot of integrity, including mm-hmm. knowing when you're over your head and mm-hmm. having that that referral network in place. But there's, you know, if you're not trained as a mental health professional and your client is schizophrenic, that's pretty clear cut. But when you're working with trauma, you know, more than half the population has been traumatized at some point in their life, and some have no lasting scars. They've processed it and they're through with it. Others, many others, it's kind of, you know, sweltering down there and comes up.
Right.
This is a tough question, but do you have any guidelines for a practitioner who doesn't have a strong mental health background to know when it's time to, when they can continue to treat the person, and mm-hmm. when it's a traumatic memory, and when it's time to make a referral?
Sure. I mean, I could certainly give some guidelines. Well, number one, let's just start off with a practitioner's intuition. Right, if as a practitioner you have a gut sense that in a session you're in over your head, well, that's enough right there, right? That's your own intuitive knowing and sensing of the totality of the situation, that I need to find a way to safely and gently re-regulate the person to be able to close the session in a good way, and then have the skills to be able, developed to be able to know I need to be referring you out to somebody that can really serve you better than I can. So that's, you know, let's just start off with that, because I think that's
mm-hmm.
most important.
Mm-hmm. It's one of our most important tools.
Yeah, they're mm-hmm. really important. Mm-hmm. So, but you know what? That we could say that easily, but the truth is also we really want to help people, right? People in the mm-hmm. tapping profession want to be able to help, and they don't want to fail. And mm-hmm. the person maybe says, oh, please, I really, you know, you're my last hope. Or they might say, you know what, you referred to me and you really helped my friend Jane. And, you know, there's so many little innuendos and details that could make what sounded really simple there a little bit more complicated. But we still have to stay in our integrity with that. So that's one. Number two, clearly, we're not treating any mental health diagnoses, right? So those, and especially if they're on medication and under the care of another mental health care provider, you need to be in communication. And especially if they're not, you need to be able to have, if you find out this person has bipolar, if you find out this person has, you know, moderate to severe depression, am I going to say that there are tough calls? Somebody is anxious all the time, but they haven't been diagnosed with general anxiety disorder, you know, or, you know what, they're low a lot of time. Their energy is low. They kind of keep to themselves more. They haven't been diagnosed with depression per se, but, and you certainly can't as a tapping practitioner without a license diagnose it, but you have a sense of it. You've got to kind of play one step at a time and work with them. If they're improving and they're improving, that's one thing. If, you know, if in a session or two or three you're seeing no results or they're really moving sideways and not getting very far from the outset and your informed consent, you need to have that pre-frame of, you know, if I don't feel that you're getting the kind of results or you don't feel that as well, you know, we'll discuss referrals out. If in a session they repeatedly, you know, everybody could in a session have a something in their past that all of a sudden they become overwhelmed by emotion. And if you're able to help them regulate and that's a one-time off situation, you know, that can be worked with. If it happens every time or repeatedly and it doesn't continue to improve, again, another sign for a referral out. Somebody starts to go into a severe freeze state or kind of a catatonic, all of those different things, then those need to be referred out. And again, I think your book is a good resource and further training is a good resource. And it's not a failure to refer out. In fact, I think that it really highlights an excellent practitioner when they learn to do that well.
Thank you. So one thing that also can happen when a client goes into a traumatic response of one kind or another is that the practitioner can be affected by it and perhaps even be traumatize themselves. Do you see that happen very much in the tapping community? And what suggestions do you have if a client, if a practitioner is starting to feel that they're losing it?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and it happens more than I think people would like to know. You know, that's referred to as secondary trauma or vicarious trauma. It's when the person in front of you that you're working with triggers your own stuff, right? Triggers your own past traumas. And they might look like a very similar situation, loss of a loved one, a form of harm, physical harm, emotional harm, things that were done in the past. They look very similar. Or, you know, they are associated in our brain through a neural network. Somehow they're connected, and all of a sudden, as a practitioner, we find ourselves triggered in the communication with a client, in the middle of the session with a client. So it absolutely happens. So, you know, number one above everything else is the importance to do our own personal work, right? Whether you use the personal priest procedure or whatever it is that you're doing to continue to clear out all the past events, the past traumas. And, you know, I can't say that you can do this many hours and it's done. That's different for each person, and it's an evolving process. But first and foremost, that's our responsibility as a practitioner to do our own personal work. Second, what I love about tapping is that we are using a neuroregulatory agent. We are tapping on ourselves throughout a session, and that helps a lot. So that's a big piece. Number three.
That one always feels like cheating to me.
You're getting paid to do your own work during a session?
Yeah.
That's great. I like that.
I love it.
Go ahead and cheat. Yeah. I would say, and then the last thing is, if you do notice during a session something that, oh, I found myself sweating, oh, I found my heartbeat staying faster, I'm still tapping, I'm still regulating myself, you know, also teach other somatic techniques and the way that you ground with your feet or where you place your eyes or a variety of different orienting or somatic techniques that we can employ during a session. And we make a note down. Wow, that one really caught me off guard. And then, of course, not during the session, you certainly don't talk about, wow, that reminds me of the time that this happened to me. If, you know, please, though I have heard that happen. you make a note, and then after the session, you do your own work, or you have a swapping partner, or you have a confidant, another colleague that you then do that work with. Yeah, so that's really important.
I think that what you just said there is so important, is that you also have a network of colleagues or a supervisor that you can talk about what happened and what your reaction is, just to just nip it in the bud, so that you're able to very quickly reorient yourself to
right.
whatever might have been triggered in yourself. And good. Well, those are, I think, excellent suggestions for someone, because it does happen, and we're human. We're humans
mm-hmm.
treating other humans at their most wounded place, and we resonate to it, and we deeply engage
right.
them, and so it is not even a weakness. It's just we all have our places, and when those places get engaged, it's another damned opportunity for growth. But if we let it go. and respond to it in a way that isn't affirming of ourselves and isn't in a container of safety, then we can really set ourselves off on a bad path. Craig, this has been great. I appreciate so much. You're clearly a wealth of knowledge. You've thought about this a lot. You've worked with these issues a lot. And this fairly brief interview has, I think, covered a tremendous amount of territory. But, of course, if people want to really develop the skills that we're talking about, there's another level that they need to take. What do you suggest as a next step for someone that really wants to explore these ideas more deeply and begin to develop the skills that are associated with these concepts?
Sure. Well, you know, there's, as we mentioned, there's a wealth of people out there writing great books and research out there. One of the things that a colleague and I, Suzanne Fagel, who's a counselor and somatic trauma educator, and I have done is we've tried to simplify that information and really make it applicable to the tapping practitioner, so that
mm-hmm.
tapping was included amongst the different concepts and, you know, polyvagal and memory reconsolidation and all those things, but really applying to how we use that in a session. So we created something called tappingoutoftrauma.com, basically, which is the website where you can, it's an 8-week webinar that really we take and we teach, and then there's Q&A, and there's an online support group for questions and answers. So that'll be opening up at the first week of May this year, and we're doing that, and we've gotten CEUs from NASW and applied for other CEUs. So that's one way that we've really tried to design a way to interpret this information to empower.
How can people find out more about that, Craig?
Yeah, it's just www.tappingoutoftrauma.com is the easiest
Great.
Way to get on the list and get information and Great. Sign up for upcoming class.
Great. Craig, it's been wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time and your caring for the field and for people's traumatized clients and for the practitioners, and I just so appreciate what you and Elena are doing in so many levels for this field. It's been wonderful to get a chance to chat with you.
Well, it's been absolutely my pleasure, and David, it's been an honor to have you interview me this time, and I could do this for hours, but we'll go ahead and stop here for now and continue it another time. Thanks.
Great. Okay. Take care.